Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we, I think, are going to have an extremely fascinating segment today. The reason being is we're going to be talking about how we talk without words. What is that? It's the nonverbal advantage. That's the title of Carol Kinsey Gohman's book. It's The Secrets and Science of Body Language at Work. Carol, welcome to the show.
Donna, thank you so much.
You are not only a very pretty lady, but you have been in the business world for a good deal of time. And when you're in business, there's a lot that is done by feel. It's an invisible environment. And so frequently people do not realize the messages that they're sending. Now, you've done 9 other business books.
Yes.
Why did you decide that you wanted to address the subject of nonverbal communication?
Well, I've been using body language, nonverbal communication, well, like all of us, all of our lives, but professionally, when I was a therapist in private practice, even before I got into organizations. So I learned about it early as I was getting my master's and then my PhD in psychology, mainly because I wanted a quick way to build rapport with clients and a way to read through some of what they were telling me to see how they really felt about things. So I had been using it at that level. When I went into organizations and started keynote speaking as you do, you become more aware of your own body language. Definitely you want to be able to stand and use gestures and expressions that enhance your message rather than destroy your message. So that became definitely a part of my skill set. But it really wasn't until I started coaching executives that I saw the power of body language in the workplace. And it wasn't just when those executives gave their keynote speeches to their all-hands meetings or when a manager would stand up and do a formal presentation. It was mostly in the informal encounters. So the body language that people used in the hallways, or in one-on-one meetings, or small meetings with their staff or their team, either very much supported their change messages, which is what I was consulting in mostly at the time, change management and change communication, or those little pieces of body language absolutely brought it down. And because people aren't so aware of their body language when they're informally speaking, that's where the power of it really lies.
You bring out some very interesting points, which we will discuss, because various environments have various feels, dependent on cultural backgrounds, who you're with, the powers that be. A word came into my head, it just flipped right out, so it'll come back to me again, but I'm really intrigued with the various observations. Now, a lot of them are so obvious. You know, people,
yeah,
when they cross their arms and they turn their back to you, or they have a raised shoulder that's just like, I'm acknowledging that you're alive, but
barely.
Get lost. You know, any of us can, we go, there's something about that person.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head when you started talking about the variances that change the meaning. Because one of the things that we do is we're all operating unconsciously with our body language signals. So that's our first language. We learned how to read body language. We learned how to send messages way before we learned how to speak, and certainly before we learned how to write. So this is an ancient communication form, but when words came in and we learned language, this became a subconscious process then, and words took the conscious thinking process over. So now, when we see people, we're still making assumptions and we're still looking at their body and we're making those those calculations with the caveman brain. I mean, it really has been something we've been doing for 100,000 years, and we don't know why we're doing it. So things like context can totally change what a gesture means. For instance, that crossed-arm gesture that you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most of the time, if we see someone with crossed arms, we think they're resistant to what we're saying. They don't like what we're saying. There's something negative about that stance. And many times that's correct. In fact, research has shown that if people sit with their arms and their legs crossed, they lower their retention level 38%. So they're definitely resistant to your ideas because they're not going to remember them.
Mm-hmm.
But if the room is freezing cold and you walk into it and someone has their arms crossed, that message is obviously different. It means I'm really cold in this room.
Mm-hmm.
If people are seated at chairs with no arms, it means I need some place to put my arms where they're comfortable. If they're seated in the first row, it means I'm protecting myself. People in the first row of your audience, if you notice that the next time you speak, many of them will have their arms crossed, maybe even their legs crossed, too. It's a natural protective gesture that we get in when that much of our body is exposed and we're in the front row of an audience.
I have noticed that many, many times, and especially, I think, more with women than with men, dependent on the attire that they have on.
That's true, and women that are large busted tend also to cross their arms many times as in a protective gesture way or as a way to minimize their chest.
There is a scene I'm recalling from a movie where a woman, she has this very arrogant appeal, and, you know, somebody's talking to her, and her head's up, and she's just so uncomfortable. And somebody said, oh, my goodness, you did us so proud. Your head was so high. She said, my corset was so tight I couldn't breathe.
Exactly. So the context, that kind of what's going on in the background, who we're with, the relationship of the person, all of that are layers of nuance that we need to be able to see through in order to be accurate when we see a particular posture. Another thing we need to look for is clusters. You know, it's one thing if somebody looks at their watch. It may mean you're boring me. I'm babysitting a dog that obviously...
Oh, don't worry about it. Sound effects
saying.
Are okay.
So if you look at a watch, it may mean that you're boring me, so please, you know, speak up or let me leave. It also may mean nobody's noticed this gorgeous watch that I just got for a present, so somebody take a look at it. But if you look at a watch, then you sigh, then you roll your eyes, and you tap your foot, and you see that that person is waiting for someone, it's obviously... in that cluster of gestures, a clearer signal that they're losing their patience than if they simply look at the watch. So too often we take one gesture, and magazines are doing that to me all the time. They'll send me pictures of celebrities and say, what does this picture say? Well, that is the silliest question to be asked in a snapshot because it doesn't give context and it doesn't give clusters.
That's right, and they could have acid indigestion and you wouldn't be able to tell it.
Exactly.
So I think that especially in social situations, it's sort of like the voice. The voice, dependent on how you have learned how to use it and how you have learned, maybe some people are very natural at modulation of the voice. Sometimes people are not. Maybe someone's had a surgery, so they have more of a monotone that goes about when they're speaking, and it's very difficult to relate to that for a while. So it's like there's so many things. You need to be a good observer, and you need to be able to, as I feel, stand back, stand down, until you can make these assessments. And gee whiz, we have a political situation that's going on today, and I think politicians are the most schooled in this, in the world.
They
I don't care what country you go to. They are so schooled, they have coaches that will say, this is what you do. I don't care what you're doing in front of the mirror in the bathroom. I want you to practice in front of me because I want this particular patterning to be so automatic you're not even going to think about it.
Yep, that's true. And another thing with politicians is that we very rarely get to see their baseline. And that's something you can do at work or with your friends, and that
mm-hmm.
is notice them when they are relaxed and when they are comfortable so that when that behavior, that body language changes, you know it's significant. It's like if the police... You know, if you were being interrogated by the police, they wouldn't start out the interrogation by saying, did you kill your neighbor? They'd say, oh, I see you live at, you know, 711 whatever street, and you, how long have you been there? And they would ask you sort of innocuous questions, most of which they already knew the answer to, but mainly not to hear what you say, but to look at how your body responds under fairly relaxed, although being interrogated by the cops probably doesn't bring out your most relaxed, but at least under non-threatening questions. So when they start to ask the questions about where were you the night of August 28th or, you know, did you murder your neighbor kind of thing, they notice then the changes in body language around what piece of what kind of question, and then they dig in at that level. Well, if you don't know someone's baseline, you can make incredible mistakes. I remember one time I was doing a speech. I'd been hired to work with the top executives of a company, and but I had to go in the day before and talk to the chief executive officer to make sure I was on track. So I arrive, I fly back east, I'm in California, fly back east, I have this appointment, I walk into the room, it's a huge conference room, this exec is sitting way at one, you know, end of the conference table, they put me way at the other, nobody else is in the room, everybody leaves. I give my entire kind of speech to him. The man does not make eye contact, he doesn't smile, he doesn't nod, he doesn't lean, he doesn't do anything. In fact, as I left the room without a handshake or anything, I thought, well, this is it. I might as well get back on the plane and go home because obviously I've lost this job. I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm headed toward the elevators. I get to the bank of elevators, and his assistant comes running out and says how much her boss has loved me and my ideas. And I said, you're kidding. I said, what would he have done had he hated them? And she said, oh, he'd have gotten up in the middle and walked out.
Isn't it amazing the difference? And you bring out a point that's very important that I'd like to share. When you're in situations like that, you have to make it okay that it's going to go either way. You know what you earnestly want, and you give your best. But for that very reason, because a lot of people, especially when they are in decision-making positionings, they don't want you to read them. They deliberately do not want you to see squat.
Right.
And that is something that for most of us who go, I don't understand it. Why don't you communicate with me? What is it here? Why are you not saying something to me?
It's that poker face.
Yes.
So they hold all their chips close to their vest when they do that. They really don't want to spill over any signal that they think it's a position of power. But you're right. You know, once you've done your best, whatever that is, then you need to let go of it because nothing else is in your control. That part has been in your control, and there's where all your focus and all your energy and all your good emotional investment should be, and you got to let go of it, and the world will do what it does with that piece.
That's right, and that comes across whenever you're doing something, too. So obviously you came across that way, and he was impressed with it, but he couldn't show you anything because I bet you he just thought, this isn't my role. This isn't what I do. I'll tell someone else to tell you.
That could very well be. It also may be that it's just the way he interacts with everyone. He keeps everything rather close. He watches people. He sees they squirm or if they rise to the occasion. And then he, like you say, behind the scenes, gives you his verdict and then you're supposed to take it from there. Very interesting.
You talk about matters of the heart. Now, I want before we go to that, you mentioned the five C's, context, clusters, congruence, consistency, and culture.
Okay, we've talked about context.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about clusters, which is the looking at the watch, sighing, eye rolling, all of that,
right.
Meaning that you look at gestures in a gestural cluster in order to really understand what's going on. Congruence is something that we are always on the lookout for, whether we know it or not, and that is we're looking to see if gestures match words. So many times, and even those schooled politicians, I've seen several of them say yes and shake their head no.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just happens. It's not so much that they're lying at the time. It's more indicative of an inner conflict of some sort. They're not quite on track. Maybe they'd like to be, but there's some piece of them that's holding back.
I think that's one reason when someone is very sincere about what they are involved with. They don't have to be eloquent necessarily, But when someone is coming from what I call their center, then it's felt. And
yes,
their emotions, their voice, their stance, everything will bring it forth. And an audience sometimes will just be so mesmerized that they'll just watch. They don't even know how to respond.
That's true. It's very captivating when you see someone with all those qualities. I call it just becoming one, so that your intent, your words, your nonverbal cues are in sync. And that's a wonderful place to be. And it's also why body language is not one of those sets of techniques that you can put on like a coat and it will disguise your inner intent. Because what happens with body language is somewhere it will leak. Now, you may be able to get through a 5-minute interview, but if someone has hired you and they're going to be working with you, at some point, how you really feel or how you really think or how you really, you know, where your heart really is going to show. Even if you are very good at watching what you say, it's going to show in your body language in some minute way, and people interacting with you may not say, well, it's because she shrugged one shoulder or took her eyes off me too soon. They may not even know what that is, but they'll leave an interaction with you saying, there's something about that woman I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because when your body language is out of sync with your verbal, when it's not congruent, we tend to either become confused, but if we have to choose, we'll believe the body.
Yes. And again, this is something that we learn. I have had many different experiences in my life, as I know you have had, where you really have to be very cautious because in certain cultures, certain things are not acceptable. Other
yes.
things are. And what might be non-offensive to us could be terribly insulting to someone else from another culture.
Yeah, there's two kinds of gestures that are culturally, that are interesting from a cultural standpoint. Gestures are either instinctive or they're acquired. And when they're instinctive, it means they're controlled by that limbic brain, that part of the brain that has been in operation longer than many other parts of the brain. And things like pupil dilation are absolutely universal. When someone sees something or someone they like, are interested in, or attracted to, their eye pupils will dilate. That is universal. That's controlled by the limbic brain. That has nothing to do with your cultural background. The same way that expressions, there are at least a half dozen expressions that are absolutely universal. And this sounds, they're emotional expressions, and this sort of sounds, well, of course, but there was a huge controversy in the social sciences, and Darwin was on one side, and people like Margaret Mead were on the other, whether these were acquired or instinctive. Now we have proof that anywhere in the world, if you are sad, happy, fearful, angry, surprised, or disgusted, you will look like anybody else. Now, those are then, as I said, those are the instinctive gestures. The acquired gestures are fascinating because those are the things that we learn, and we learn them at such a young age that they too become subconscious, and those are the things that have vast cultural variances. Like you mentioned, even small things like hand gestures, the way that we say okay with that finger circle that we make between the thumb and the first finger is highly offensive in other parts of the world. Our V for victory sign, highly offensive in other parts of the world. The way we wave with our fingers out back and forth isn't the way many people in the world wave. In fact, that signal in many parts of the world means, no, I don't want that. Or it's again, a very insulting gesture, particularly in countries like Greece, and the closer you get to their face, the more insulting it is. But in general, I think the three things that I found the most different from a cultural variance perspective are eye contact, space, and touch. The amount of eye contact that's appropriate, that is what we expect, that is how we judge people in one country is either creepy or absolutely irresponsible or disrespectful in another. So the way we make eye contact and how long we hold it and when we make eye contact and with whom has incredible cultural variance. So does space. People from northern cultures, including the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Northern Europe, we tend to carry around about a 2-foot bubble. We just like people to stay outside that bubble unless they know us very well. Our close business associates, our friends, our family are certainly welcome in. Other people, not so much. In other cultures, that's absolutely not true. Where we like 18 inches to 2 feet, they're very comfortable with around 12, around a foot, six, even sometimes 6 inches. So they will, as we think, get in our face in order to make a point because that's their comfort level, and we will back up in order to create that space because that's ours.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually seen, you know, a northern European person backed through an entire conference room by the Spaniard that they were in, that he was in conversation with, neither one of whom were very much aware that this was going on because they were so intent on the conversation. But one would get closer, the other would back up, one would get closer, and they went absolutely clear across the conference room.
That's funny. Now let's address something that everyone is going to encounter. The liar. How can someone determine that someone's lying to them? Sometimes you get this little flutter in your stomach area and you'll go, I don't know, there's just something there. What are some more clear clues?
Well, what were you really looking for in deception clues? I'm going to take that back. I'm going to give you a couple of cues that are more directly linked to deception, and then I'm going to tell you that a lot of people have other cues that really just say I'm under stress, and that stress may be part of the deception.
Mm-hmm.
So let me start with the deception cues. A lot are, if you think of when a little child tells a lie, the immediate reaction that little one wants to do is throw her hand over her mouth because, oh my gosh, she knows she's just giving you a whopper. Now, by the time that little girl gets a bit older, she knows that that's a dead giveaway. So if she's going to lie, she's got to perfect that and keep her hands away from her mouth. But that urge or that impulse that people have to cover their mouth when they lie or misspeak is so hardwired that we simply transform it. We transform it into a touching of the lip, or many times a touching of the nose, because also in the lying process, sometimes there's a rush of adrenaline and actually the tip of your nose tickles. So when you see people speaking and there's a lot of hand-to-mouth or hand-to-nose touching, that many times is a signal that person is misspeaking, or, by the way, is listening to someone that they believe is misspeaking. So if you've just given a nice talk to your team and everybody on your team is rubbing their nose and touching their mouth, they probably don't believe you. They think that they just listened to some deception. But also, when a person touches their legs, they pacify themselves by rubbing their hands on their legs, or they touch their chest, they pacify themselves that way, or they pull on a necklace, or they twiddle their hair, or pull on an ear, or pull under their chin and then their neck. Those are all stress relieving or pacifying gestures. And they too may mean that I'm lying, because part of what the process of lying in the brain is, you've got to remember what the truth is. You've got to remember not to say the truth. You've got to recall how you wanted the lie to go, and then you've got to say the lie. And that is exhausting. I mean, unless you're a professional liar or very good at it, there's a lot of machinations that are going on in the brain that is just tiring to do. So the stress level of having to remember those things and do all those things mentally rises. And so you see a lot of stressful body language cues. But those body language cues aren't always deception. They may be stress about something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's why even polygraphs aren't, you know, really submitted or admitted into court, because the stress reaction is obviously there, but whether that's just because the person is lying or because they've hit something, that's a very sore topic for that person, a very uncomfortable thing to discuss, is impossible to detect.
Well, this has been very, very informative, and I know that there is something here that I want to touch on, too. And I'm going to read it exactly from your book. That you say, if you're among the nearly 2 million people who work as a wait staff in the United States, give touching a try. Remember to touch lightly and briefly on the shoulder or the palm of the hand. Then compare your results with these research findings. 1. Casually touching customers increases the tips of both male and female servers. 2. Touching increases tips more when waitresses touch the female members of mixed-sex couples than when they touch the men. 3. Touching increases the tips from young customers more than those from older customers. What a fascinating phenomenon. Now, this is just the United States. Is this something that happens in Europe, in Africa, in Asia? What would be the difference?
This is a U.S. study by a college that was looking at their restaurant and hotel department. I think it's more powerful in the U.S. because we're a touch-deprived society. The cultural difference around touch is dramatic when you look at northern and southern kinds of cultures. I mean, in the Middle East, men walk holding hands. When I was doing a program in Venezuela, I got off the plane. I hadn't met this man before. He hugged me. He grabbed me. He touched my arm. But the amount of touch that goes on in other cultures is far greater, particularly around business interactions, of course, than it is in our culture. So that when you add touch, even a 40th of a second, you create an instantaneous, closer connection with someone. And I think it's more prevalent in the U.S. than it would be in other parts of the world. But touch is the most primitive and the most essential form of nonverbal communication. You know, Mayo Clinic says that premature babies that are stroked actually grow 40% faster than those who don't receive the same amount of touching. So we need it from the day we're born. We don't get a lot of it in business. And if you can create a touch, always shake hands with someone, get their attention by touching them on the arm or the shoulder. It is amazing what that very quick skin-to-skin or touch-to-touch interaction can do.
I think our society has so many mixed signals, and it makes me sad so often that we have tried to train children not to touch or don't let anybody touch you.
Yes.
And I know there are going to be a lot of people that will say, oh, Donna, this is what is related to child abuse and so on and so forth. But when you don't touch, when you are not able to be there, there is such a sterile environment. And when people grow up with what I call the puritanical attitude, it's very, very hard because you become so fearful. You really, really become fearful. And I liked your statement in here about how a study done found that greater than 50% of 263 patients who sued their doctor claimed they were so turned off by the doctor they wanted to sue him or her before the alleged event even occurred.
Yeah.
Now, who wants to be with a physician like that? But millions of people are with doctors. And doctors have been trained to have this attitude, this lack of personalization. And I've had a few experiences like that, and I looked at it and said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to be around you. There's no reason why I'm going to give you the responsibility of making a decision about my wellness when you're colder than a frozen fish.
Absolutely. I think it was Mark Twain that said, people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Right.
It's very true in healthcare, and I am very fortunate. I have a great general practitioner doctor, an intern as she is, she could teach this course. I mean, she absolutely believes and understands. She sits, looks you right in the eye. She doesn't stand and peer over you. She doesn't look at her watch or make you think that in any way you're taking up more than your share of her time. She squares her body off to you when she talks to you. She leans forward. She has so many positive, and it comes from a core, like you were talking about earlier, of sincere caring. If she did those things without the caring, it would still feel artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's congruent with how she really feels, it comes through. Now, which brings up another thing about body language. You can't phony it up for long, but a lot of times people interfere with their own true intent because they're nervous or they're shy or they just feel awkward. So maybe the reason that someone doesn't come across well isn't because they don't intend. Their core isn't strong and centered, and they're not, and they don't have a good message, and they don't believe in it, but because their other attributes, their shyness or their awkwardness or their lack of sociability skills or whatever, impedes that. Now, those are the kind of people that you can really coach successfully,
mm-hmm.
because they start with that sincere intent, and all you have to do is get some of their bad habits pushed out of the way so that that intent can shine through.
The Nonverbal Advantage. My guest today, Carol Kinsey Goman, Secrets and Science of Body Language at Work. This would make a wonderful gift for a young person that's wanting to enter into the world of business, college, different environments. It's good for any of us. It's good to be reminded of what we should be aware of. Carol, quickly, we're out of time. Do you have a website that I can share with people?
Nonverbaladvantage.com.
Nonverbaladvantage.com. It's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for being with me today, Carol.
Thank you so much, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. I've got lots of good things to share with you today. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I wanted to let you know, phone lines are open. Yahoo! If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers that you can call in to. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, on any one of those lines, when you call in, I would be delighted. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, we like to know where you're calling from, too, what part of the country or the world. And then let me do my thing. I'm a good information resource. I'll give you my perceptions, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you might have an interest in. It can be anybody, anything, anywhere. It doesn't make any difference to me. And I'll give you what I see. So, again, 877-876-5227. Or 888-815-9756, and also 530-876-3222. Now, I do want to let you know that tomorrow is going to be a Best of Donna show. tomorrow, and also on Monday I am going to be having Best of Donna shows because I'm going to be flying, and it's just, I haven't figured out how to do the radio show from 35,000 feet up. It's too noisy. Can't do it that way. Anyway, so we'll be having that, but we'll be back on Tuesday live and in studio, and I want to let you know about the people that I'm going to have next week as guests. And all of this is going to be up on the BBSRadio.com site, so you will be able to see who is coming up. Now, we're going to be talking about earthquakes on Tuesday. Yes, I've got a very talented guest. Cal Ori is her name, and she's a fascinating lady, and she did a lot of study with a man who predicts earthquakes. But we're also going to be talking about oil and vinegar. Talk about a strange show? Woo! We're going to have it on Tuesday. Then we're going to talk about the Encore Effect, Mark Sanborn, on Wednesday of next week. Great guy, wonderful, wonderful story. It's how you can take the tools of self and make them work for you effectively. And then on Thursday, we'll be talking with Egan Sanders, The Magic Box. This is a fabulous fable that is just loaded with wisdom, and we're going to be sharing parts of it with you. And then if you are a person that loves baseball, you're going to want to hear a story about a Native American. His name was Chief Bender. And he had a fascinating life, an absolutely incredible career in baseball, and Tom Swift is going to be on the air with me, and we're going to be talking about this fascinating man whose story, well, not too many people know about, just an incredibly accomplished individual in one of America's favorite sports. So give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number again, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, and also 530-876-3222. I really enjoy having the opportunity of reviewing so much material and various stories that are sent to me about different people and different things that they've accomplished. So often when we walk into a grocery store, we'll see major magazines and they have these titles blaring, and usually it's, what's the raciest gossip you can find? When I was growing up, it was often called yellow journalism, because there's a lot of hype, and so much of the hype is not, it will give a certain tone, but the truth of what really is being expressed on the inside of the magazine or publication may not be the same as it is implicated to be in the headlines. Of course, they're wanting to sell material, and that's not unusual. But I have found that when you start looking at various types of material and various pieces of information, you'll find stories about people that are just absolutely incredible. People that invest in life. They invest their skills, their talents, their dreams, their passions, and they bring them into a form and a reality that's just amazing. And it all starts with an idea, something that somebody wants to do. And it can come from within a family, it could come from a working associate, it can come from anywhere. And I wanted to share this story with you about Rick Bernstein and his family. They're out of Maryland. And this journey that they began to take of experience, they wanted to do something special. There was a comment by her daughter. She looked at a table that they had that had all kinds of fresh vegetables on it, like corn, green beans, tomatoes, and gobs of zucchini. If ever you've ever tried to grow zucchini, I don't know what happens. Zucchini seems to get hormonal bursts that give you more than you'd ever dream you could possibly get. You, after a while, you can't even give it away. You have so much of it. Well, they decided, the family decided, that the kids were going to go ahead and sell all of this abundance of fresh vegetables. And what they found, even though they were almost giving it away, nobody was buying it. So the daughter asked Dad, Rick, she said, Dad, what are we going to do with all this stuff? Well, Dad had been trying to figure this out. I mean, they had a lot of fresh vegetables. So, you know, he had to sit down and think about this. Well, what he decided he was going to do is that he was going to take it down to a particular facility. And it was a homeless mission, and it was called Our Daily Bread. And he just loaded up everything. They had potatoes, you name it. They had all kinds of stuff. So he just loaded all of that up in his truck and didn't know anybody down there, just knocked on their door and asked, "Can you use this produce?" The man's face just turned on like you wouldn't believe. It just lit up like a Christmas tree. He asked him again. He said, "Fresh produce?" He said, "Would you like fresh produce?" The man said, "It's really fresh produce?" He said, "Yeah, we have a garden at our home, and we just have this abundance, and we can't eat it. Would you like to have it?" He said, "Wow, this is terrific." The guy goes out to the truck, looks at all the stuff that Rick has. He said, "You know, I do the cooking here. I volunteer to come in and cook. I'm a chef. I never, ever get fresh produce like this. What I usually get is a cast-off from the grocery stores." He said, "Boy, our guests are going to love these." So he said this was just absolutely incredible. He had never been into this mission before for the homeless. And he said there were all kinds of people in there from different places, and they were all volunteers. But he said to the man, the chef that had come out, same Rick, said, "Would you like for me, whenever I have some extra, to bring it?" The guy said, "Please do." Well, it became a part of his routine. He started going into the church on a regular, not to the church, but to the mission on a regular basis. And he enjoyed it so much. He was having a great time. Well, there was a moment when he was being very thoughtful at home, and his wife wanted to know what was bothering him. He said, "You know, we're not doing enough." And she said, "What are you talking about, we're not doing enough?" He said, I've always loved farming. I really think we should buy a small farm." Well, you can imagine her response to that. It's like, okay, you're talking about something here. I just can't figure out what you're trying to communicate. Well, as they talked about it, she had always known that her husband loved farming. It was something that was very close to his heart. But this was more than just loving farming. He really wanted to do something different. So she said, "Okay, you feel so strongly about this. We're going to do this. Let's start shopping for some property." Now, we're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, I'll tell you what this family did just because of a little girl's question. What are we going to do with all this, especially the zucchini? You'll find out when we come back. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, or Canadians, 888-815-9756, and also 530-876-3222. Well, before we went on the break, I was telling you about the little girl that started something by asking a question, hey, Dad, what do we do with all these vegetables, and especially the zucchini? Well, again, Rick goes to the mission, and he finds out that they'll take everything that he possibly can get. And that leads him into going after a dream that he had had for a good portion of his life, and that was to become a farmer. Well, he and his family ended up finding a 42-acre farm in Maryland. Beautiful, beautiful location. The farm itself was almost 200 years old, and the original owner, his name was George Hampshire, and he had been buried in a churchyard that was just a short distance away from the farm. As soon as his wife saw it, she said, this is the place. Now, you can imagine not having really done any farming, doing a first year of this. It was a lot of hard work. Now, he ended up getting a mentor, to his surprise, that was the executive director of a Maryland food bank, and he said, I'll help you get this together. You don't have to do this all by yourself. So he introduced Rick and his family to the Mid-Atlantic Gleaning Network, where they met all kinds of people. And do you know what? They loved to share information. They weren't antisocial at all. They said, you need help, you let us know. We want you to be successful. And so they worked together. And one of the farmers would joke that he'd like to sell tickets to watch people not make it, especially those from the city that had never really been in the farming experience. But he said, we ended up getting equipment. We ended up getting some dedicated volunteers. And there were all kinds of things that were going on. So they would plant the food. Youth groups, when they found out what the directive was for this family, that they wanted to be able to contribute more food to organizations that needed it, they got all excited. Food banks were getting food like you wouldn't believe, and it was fresh. It wasn't canned. It was fresh. Now, they started off their first year with just a couple of acres, ended up expanding to 4 and 8, and they're now into their fifth year plus. They're a nonprofit. It's called the First Fruits Farm. They now have 62 tillable acres. They have grown and given away over 1 million pounds of fresh produce in the last 4 seasons. And he still works for his investment firm. But he said, as soon as I get off work, off goes the suit and on go the jeans. And he said it's just changed his life. And they're always so grateful for this opportunity for the farm. It has made a tremendous difference in their life. Can you imagine the difference it's made in the lives of the people who are the recipients of this fresh food? It's just amazing. One man's dream, a child's question, it makes a difference. And that's how simple it can be. And I don't know, these people may or may not ever be written up in a headliner, but I'll tell you what, they should be. Just like so many other people, just like you, that are out doing what they have to do. Don't ever give up on your dreams. They're too precious. And you never know how they're going to manifest. And I think that's what Rick and his family have been able to demonstrate and see. And that's part of often what we see as the American dream. How can you go out and achieve something? Well, you never know how it's going to come to you. You just don't know which direction is going to pop up and inspire you and make you realize that you've got that special touch, that special magic for whatever it is that you want to do. My guest earlier on the hour, she has a skill with communication. Myself, I have a passion for broadcasting. I absolutely love it. I love what I do. Why?
because it enables me to grow, just like this family grew, by doing what they really had a heart for. And that's what you need to remember. When you have something that touches your heart and your mind and your spirit, you're going to be a winner. Whether or not you ever make a gazillion dollars off of it, that's not the point. The point is, if you're true to yourself. I mean, let's face it. Rick has to support his family. He did this farm because he wanted to give back, if you will. He loves farming. He does this not because he wants to own 10,000 acres of land, but because he wants to do something where he feels that he's giving back in his own way. Gifts from the earth. And for him, that's important. What is it that you want to give back? What is it that you know you have a wonderful knack for and that you can utilize and you can share with so many people? Sometimes in life, we have a tendency to closet ourselves off. We forget that there's a great big world out there. And if you want to find out how big it is, just go and volunteer for something you've never done before. If you're a student and you're in high school, maybe do a student exchange program. If you're in a community, maybe you find out about other cultures. Go volunteer. See what you can do to contribute to introduce yourself to another culture. It will make your life so much richer. It's so easy to become boxed in. It is so easy to become stagnant. But oh, let me tell you, that stagnation, oh, it's so good when you can wash it away with some enthusiasm, with some new information, with going to the library maybe and just reading a book or getting involved in something that teaches you something brand new. You just never know. But it empowers you as a person. Why? Because as a human being, you should expand yourself. You should expand your mind. You should expand your dreams. You just never know who's going to say, hey, I'll help you. I'd like to see you achieve that. What can I do for you? It's an amazing thing. People have changed my life in so many ways, in so many magical ways, that I would never have dreamed possible. One of my listeners was telling me how people in a certain area of Arkansas were listening to my show. I said, oh, really? How'd they find out about it? Oh, I don't know, but they know about your show, and they listen to it. You need to know you're making a difference. That meant a lot to me. And so it should be with you. Again, you might not find the tambourines of media banging on your front door and going, rah, 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 here you are for your 50 seconds worth of fame. That may not happen to you. But you could have an impact on people's lives in a way and manner you never knew was possible. But you'll know it in your heart when you have the experience. There's a wonderful holiday period that's coming up for all of you. I want to wish you the best. Take care driving. Don't be in a hurry. After all, we want to have you back here, right here at bbsradio.com, to join us and to enjoy the wonderful people and the wonderful information that we have to share with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Nobody else has the right to manipulate your mind, your soul, or your spirit. There may be some things externally you can't control, but you belong to you. And in belonging to you, if you invest in yourself, oh boy, we're all going to be richer because of it. Good to know you. Have a fabulous weekend. We'll be back live. Don't forget, tomorrow and Monday, it will be a Best of Donna, but we'll be back live right here at bbsradio.com on the Donna Sebo Show on Tuesday. God bless. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.